You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Lisa Manzo. We talk about her choices over the past 7-ish years to take a deep and personal look and exploration at some of her childhood experiences. So the conversation I have with Lisa touches on topics including her relationship with her parents, origin work on the stories of her childhood, personal development, and also sobriety. One of the things here that's fun or interesting is that we all have childhoods. When we make it to adults, that's one of the things, right? And one thing that happens for many of us as adults is that we can look back on our youth with our adult eyes. And sometimes that means we see things with the impact or the shift of the time that has passed and the experience we've gained. I think that you're going to love this conversation, and I'm excited to share it with you. So let's do it. Thank you for listening today.
Welcome
I hope
to
that
the
you
Art
enjoy
of
the show. And before I go,
Manzo,
I want to encourage you to become a bigger part
I
of
am.
The conversation.
I'm excited.
Yay. Obviously.
Yay.
Subscribe
right.
wherever you're
I start
listening
all my
to the
conversations
show.
With the same
listen
first question.
To more episodes.
What part of the world do
That'd
you
be
call
great.
Home?
Obvi again.
Now
please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails.
I love that.
Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you.
To
open application, just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time. Remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me.
Not what I
until just
I
now. I did
Vegas,
just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected,
which came
that
first?
May not mean
was
that you're
it
lost.
The choice
it
to get
may
sober,
just mean
or the choice
that you're
to
on
peel
your
back
way.
The layers
this is Amy Stone, signing off.
Well, I knew I was so unhappy and I knew something had to change. And I said,
the Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says
So. That's it. That's
anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment. And the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host.
Repeating them back because I.
Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal. An individual situation,
and
needs, circumstances,
in
and
your opinion,
because like you know, this is about experience, personal experience, not expertise. But in your opinion, do you think that there is a connection between sobriety and the successful experience of healing and rewiring and recovering from childhood experiences and trauma?
Oh, absolutely, because. When you go through the 12 steps, there's a point where they have you write out all your resentments, right? Because people have resentments. And then it asks you, after you do that, they don't tell you this, but after you do that, then it says, what part did you play in that?
Okay. Yeah. So when you went through, when you chose to get sober, you did not do it by yourself. You took part in a 12-step program.
Yeah. So I did try to do it by myself. I did it for a whole year. And when my anniversary hit, I woke up that day thinking I was going to be so happy. Woohoo. I was sober a whole year. And I was so angry that day because I wasn't any happier a year later after giving up drinking. Look, it brings up emotion, right?
Yeah.
And that was okay. And that was the day I surrendered and I said, okay, I need help.
Okay. All right. So that's a beautiful story, and I appreciate you sharing your experience. We're recording this in January. It won't go live until April, but a lot of people, this is a personal conversation they have with themselves in this time of year. It's like, you come out after that serious season of like indulgence of cookies and cheese and parties, and a lot of people are like, all right, dry January, here we go. It's a really big time for that. All right. So you gave me two stories from your childhood that we can talk about. I think we'll go through them both. Interesting to me as the host, not really related to the conversation. These stories both involve photography. And I think that's interesting because I trained to be a photographer in school. I had dreams of being a newspaper photographer, and then I owned a portrait studio for about a decade. And as part of that portrait studio, I actually learned some of the things, some stuff about the psychology of why people invest in photographs and why they can be important. And I think that's really interesting. Before we can dig in, share a little bit about with us about your family structure and what it looked like when you were a kid. You don't have to go too personal, but did you live with two parents? Did you have
Sure.
siblings? Was there extended family living with you? What did your house look like when you were a kid?
Okay, so when I was really little, my aunt lived with us until she got her own apartment, and she was an alcoholic, and
Okay.
she's sober over 35 years now, so good for her. So, and she used to babysit me with her hangover, meaning she slept all day in the bed, and I had to find something to do.
Okay.
And then after she moved out, it was me, my mother, my father, and my brother. And then when I turned 8, I opened my father's closet door and I saw all his clothes were gone.
Okay.
And I knew instantly what that meant.
And what did it mean? Share with us. It meant that he was gone.
It meant that he was not going to live with us anymore.
Okay, so your parents got divorced or just separated, living in different places?
Okay, so they separated and never divorced. And, we always had a joke about it. We actually went out for their 50th anniversary, even though they weren't together, because they had a better relationship apart than they did when they were together.
So that is a super is today we would call that. I don't know if you've heard this, you would call that living apart together. And so there is a small section of people who never uncouple as far as the legalities, but they function better when they don't live together. And as somebody who has cohabitated with a bunch of people in my own life, living with other people is really hard a lot of the time, and I fully support that movement because there are times where I'm just like, I just want to live by myself. I don't want to worry about anything anybody else is doing. For example, this morning, there's like fingerprints all over one of my cabinets. And I'm like, seriously, who are you people that like don't wash your hands before you reach into the cabinet? But okay, that's my house. All right. So that was what your family looked like. All right. So one of the memories that you shared was about a time when you wanted to wear a dress, a particular, I think, pink dress, and your mom said no. Tell us more if you remember that story. How old were you when this happened, and what was going on that you remember about this story?
So I was 5. I was in kindergarten, and it's so emotionally embedded in my head that I'm 63 years old and I'm still talking about it because it affected me, right? So I was a tomboy, always in pants and running around, and this was picture day. And I just wanted to look pretty, and I wanted to feel pretty.
Okay.
And I got out my pink dress. I put it on, and my mother says, "Oh no, you're not wearing that." And she took all my joy.
Yeah.
And that was and looking back and reflecting, that was a recurrent theme in my life. I'd get really excited about something, and my mother would take all the joy from it.
So this is picture day at school, which is a big day, a big deal in when you're five.
Yeah.
And you had a dress that picked out. What did you do in that photo? Like, how did it, did you just
I
go,
stuck
or
my
did you?
tongue out because I was mad. I
Yeah.
was so mad that I was so mad that I had to wear this ugly dress. And it wasn't an ugly dress. It's just not one that I wanted to wear. It was stripes and it looked like a long t-shirt. There was nothing girly about it. It looked like my mother put a long t-shirt on me.
So, do you guys still have that photo? Like, did this story come up because you do still have this photo? It came home and it's in like the scrapbooks, or did your mom not even buy the pictures?
My father had the photo.
Your father had the
Father
photo.
had the photo because he knew I hated that dress, and he kept it all through the years. I don't have the photo anymore because it burned in a fire. But I remember the photo, and he had it on his dresser for years. And I love my dad, and looking back, he could be very passive aggressive, and that was him being passive aggressive because he knew how much that and he. He it created resentment for me with my mother that she made me wear that dress, and he wouldn't do that. And I didn't get that hindsight until after he died, and I giggle about it now because I'm like, wow, it was so many more layers to this than I have any idea about.
It is very interesting, and I'm going to come back to that in a second because our relationship with our parents, my relationship with my parents changed as I got older and continued to change after they died, which is a wild experience. So as an adult, you describe these situation or this situation that what you were living through as growing up emotionally parentified by your mother, where you became responsible for her feelings and learned to silence your own feelings. You say you were bullied into people pleasing, perfectionism, and believing your worth came from compliance. So my question is, and this is not a great question, but roll with it and let's see what happens. Think back to your experience as a child. Five is pretty young, but this went on for, there's more that happened. And you didn't know any of those words or how to describe that at the time. So if you can think about how this felt to you when you were a child and how you might have described it then.
I would have just thought as a child, I remember thinking, why is she being so mean to me?
Yeah. Okay. So, because
In
the,
child
right.
language.
Child language, and we don't. One of the interesting things is that I don't. Things have to be pretty severe for a child to even know that something is not normal or that it's bad, because it's the only experience you have. And so, like you, I grew up in New York City, and when I moved out of the city, I went to college in the Midwest. And sometimes people would ask me, they were like, "Well, what was it like to be a kid in New York City?" And I was like, "I don't have an answer to that because it just was like I didn't know." I wasn't like, an 8-year-old with some other idea of what other people were doing. I was just living my life.
Right. I appreciate that.
So there's no way you could have known. Okay, so the other story that is photo inspired is from your first communion. I think this is an excellent point of reflection. Also about what you got to wear, very interestingly. So what I think is interesting about this is that a lot of adults in families will actually have input for their kids about what clothes they're wearing, especially in an event like a first communion. So help us understand from your experience why, like you can tell us the story of what happened, and then share if you can why you think it made such an impact on you.
Okay, so similar story. I was making my communion, and they had the, and I'm so sorry I brought that paper home to my mother. I should have thrown it out, and I had the thought to throw it out, and I didn't. And we had family communion or class communion. My
So
mother
you were in
wanted,
Catholic school then?
Yes,
Okay, Catholic
absolutely,
school.
yes.
Okay,
Oh,
so it's a
Catholic
little bit
school.
different than if you're not in Catholic school because for folks who don't go through this in their life, like, you do a lot of the things in school that you would otherwise be doing on a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, or Sunday in front of the congregation.
Right, so we did all this in school, all the preparation because we had religion every day. We did it all in school. So we and I wanted to make communion with my class.
Okay.
My mother didn't want to. She wanted to do family communion, and we've talked about this. Like I asked her actually about this, and hers. Well, I wanted you to stand out.
Okay. What do you think she meant
And
by that?
she. What she that's what she said, but knowing all the history and now, because we talked about it in the last 5 years, she wanted to show off her family. It was not about me. It
Okay.
was about it was about showing off for her and how far, and I really believe it's how far that she had come in life
Okay.
because she came so far from her upbringing to where we were that day.
Which sounds like a very pleasant thing for her to share. Like from her perspective, I think I can understand where it would begin. So, but this shows up and keep going with the story. So she wants to have, she chooses that you're going to have public family congregation, communion. What happens next?
Okay, well, I don't have a choice. Like, I never have a choice. My feelings never mattered. What I say never matters. I don't even know why. You know, these were my times of trying to assert myself and get her to see me. And I also understood that once my mother made up her mind, there was no changing it. Period.
So
And
can I ask what might be, I know I'm interrupting you, but I'm also giving you a little pause because I can tell that these stories still have an emotional connection. What if I ask you what generation you're in, like I'm Gen X, what generation are you
oh,
in?
I'm a baby boomer. I'm at the tail
Baby
end of it.
boomer. And then is your mom what we would call the silent generation? Do you know what she would be?
I believe she's the silent generation.
All right. So what would you say that you grew up with some of the messaging of like, be seen and not heard, like a very control. Okay. All right. So I just wanted to put that into context. Some of the people who are in the audience will be watching and they'll be able to see you, but other people are listening. And so that will help them understand some of the things at play. Okay. So first communion, you and your mom, she lays down the law. You do not feel like you can negotiate with her. What happens?
Okay, and then they decide. I made the mistake of complimenting my mother's beehive hairdo, you know, like Marge Simpson.
Oh,
Okay.
okay.
And she says, and made the mistake of doing it in front of my aunt, the hairdresser.
Okay.
And they decide that, oh, we'll give you that hairdo.
All right. All right.
So the story goes, it keeps going. And I'm like, and I know once my mother and my aunt, I'm 8 years old, and I know that once they decide something, it's like that nothing's going to stop that train. It's going downhill full speed. That's it. So I decide to cut my hair.
Oh, wow. All right. So you're 8 years old. You give your mom a compliment. The women in your life, the adult women in your life, misread this compliment and they decide that what you're asking for is a beehive. And you go into the bathroom with a pair of scissors and cut off your
Oh no, I don't go in the bathroom. I'd have got caught in the bathroom.
hair. Do you go? But you cut your hair on your own.
I went to my bedroom and I remember going like this with my hair. So I'm pulling my hair up and I'm like, okay, how much can I cut so I don't look stupid? I remember thinking that. And I'm like, okay, here it looks good. And I took my little kid scissors and I just started cutting.
That is, and so one of the kids in my house and my family did that when she was young. And the story came up over break when she was home with her college friends. And she still remembers doing it. It was not dramatic because it's just like she gave herself bangs and she did a halfway decent job. And I wasn't upset about it or anything. I was just like, okay, let's do this. But so it worked out pretty well. And she still remembers what inspired her making that decision. It's one of those things that like people can remember for a very long time. All right. So you cut your hair. And your mom has an opinion about the dress you wear, which tell me more about this because the communion dress is like sort of like a uniform that like everybody's wearing kind of the same thing.
Exactly, but my mother wanted to find someone that didn't look like all the other girls. So
Okay.
my communion dress looked like a 20s flapper dress.
Okay. And all right, and what did you want to wear? Did you want to wear one that looked like what your friends were wearing?
Yes, I wanted to just fit in and be one of my friends and belong. I wanted to belong to something. I
And
didn't
she
want to.
wanted you to stand out. That's the way she talks about it now. Okay. All right. So, why do you think that looking back with the lens of an adult, because there are people who will be listening to this and thinking, well, moms tell their kids what to wear. Like, why is that a big deal? What do you think it was about this that made such an impact on you? Because we're going to talk about how you responded to these in your as you what got older. What do you think it was about these things that was such an impact on you as a person?
My voice didn't matter.
Yeah.
What I had to say doesn't mean anything.
Okay. Yeah.
And it
That's
still shows up.
how.
It shows up in the fact that I have to like really assert myself and people still aren't listening. And then I'll walk away, and then something bad will happen because they didn't listen to me.
Okay. Yeah.
And sometimes I just have this intuition and this knowing about certain things, and I just can see it, like, oh, this is gonna happen if you do that. And trying to get them to hear me, and it still shows up sometimes.
And then, okay, so that's, I could go down a rabbit hole there, but I'm going to stick to your
Yeah.
story. I'm going to stick to your story. Okay, so in your story, one of the things that happens that you connect the dots with this, these are your childhood experiences. You get older, you begin to experience depression, and you turn to substances. Today, we would call this substance misuse. It was probably just exploration at some point at the beginning. How old were you when you remember this starting?
Okay, so I remember as a child, we used to go to the neighbor's house and drink on New Year's Eve. And my
Okay.
mother would let me, I'd have a soda and she'd put a little wine in it for me. Not,
Really? I that
yes.
so I've never that I've never so that I've never heard. We used to I have a memory of I have a memory of going to the beach as a kid, and I would get sand in my father's beer, and so he would buy little tiny mini beers that would go in the cooler. And when I think back about that, I'm like, that's a crazy thing for an adult to do, to buy their kids their own little beers. I assume I've talked to him about it since. He's like, you weren't really drinking it. Like I'm like, it was like you held on to the can, I poured it out. But so I've never heard about wine poured into the soda. I wonder what
Well, that
that.
was my idea because I didn't like the wine.
All right, very that's fair. So you would have been young when that happened. When did the misuse and the destructive behaviors really start?
Okay, so drinking was 18
Yep, that was the legal age, sure.
legal age was 18. So we started going out to clubs at 17, and we started going out to clubs, and that was great. And we'd always dance, so it and I always got a buzz on. Because I
Yeah.
love the feeling, because and that's when it starts. Because you like the feeling of the buzz. You're feeling good. It takes away everything, and you have that buzz. It was always like, okay, we're gonna go out and let's get a buzz.
Yeah. So 18, which is, I mean, that's a reasonable in the United States where we do all the binge drinking things and it's a part of our culture for a lot of people. That's not a super early age to start experimenting when this. When did it become problematic?
I remember the day. So after I got divorced,
Okay, so was that, were you, how old were you then?
I was 43
Okay. All
ish.
right. That's, yeah. When did you realize it? What did it look like when you realized that it was not serving you?
So what I realized is, so after I got divorced, I had just gotten my teaching license, and I'm working in a classroom with the female version of my ex-husband.
Okay.
And I spent 8 hours together in a classroom with this person who was so mean to me because she was angry at me for something administration did that I had no control over. And it was a miserable 10 months of my life. And I had to tell you, I'd walk in my door and I'd pour myself a drink because that's how stressful the day was.
All right, so you entered into, these are my words, not yours.
Yeah.
And you can correct me if they don't make any sense and I'm not doing a good job explaining and doing justice to your story. But you then create like a cycle of behavior that is not productive. You go to work, you're miserable at work, you come home, and your stress management tool, your coping mechanism is alcohol at this point.
Right, because I didn't know any other ones at the time. So that's the one I had.
Yeah, and the reason I mentioned that, and I am not an alcohol, I'm not a therapist of any kind. So I'm not like a qualified person to do this, but I think there's grace in reflection and acknowledging that often when we use these coping mechanisms that don't last forever, they begin because it's all we have. We're in pain and we're uncomfortable, and all we know how to do is the thing that's in front of us. And, when we look back on that, sure, there might have been a choice, but you didn't know anything else. That was what you had in front of you.
Right, and I didn't have options in my life. I dated a man that was emotionally unavailable at the time. So I couldn't talk about my emotions to him because it was uncomfortable for him. So I had nobody. My kids were 6 and 9 at the time. I'm like, I'm not putting my burden on my children. Everybody thinks the teaching is the greatest job ever. Are you nuts? You have the whole summer off. You're crazy. I'm so happy I don't teach anymore. It was the best decision I ever made in my life. Oh my God, it just wasn't for me. And I made a difference in the kids' lives, but it took so much from me. And I had no one to go to and no one to talk to. I should have been in therapy at the time. I'm sure I was, but I was more addressing my family than I was about my job, and I didn't even see the correlation back then. I'm only making it now on this podcast because I'm always making revelations. And I was in therapy forever, but this never came up.
All right, that's very interesting. And so you are an intuitive person because the very next thing I was going to ask about was what support you used navigating this process. We talked about once you made the decision to get sober, you did a year of white knuckling and solo, then you leaned into 12-step programs. As you were leaning into self-exploration, you were doing some therapy with doctors and therapists. When did you discover about origin work and actually begin to look back at your childhood experiences?
I went to a personal development course.
Okay, I love this story already. Tell me more.
I went, so first, I want to know. So I went to a personal development course because I need to change my life and I need help and I can't do it alone. So I got to go meet some people who've already done it so I can follow in their path. Right. So I start on this personal development journey and I meet a whole class, different class of people. And this started in 2018. And I made some lifelong friendships through doing that. And then along the way, through the program, you get exposed to different avenues. Like I got exposed to NLP,
Okay.
neuro-linguistic programming for the audience. And it's about how you use your words and language to program your mind. And that helped me understand why I had the thoughts I had. And that gave me such peace. Oh, this is how it works, and this is how I can change it just by shifting the words. I can change everything
Yeah.
and changing the story I'm telling myself. And so with that door opened, then the door opened up to past life regression, and Reiki healing, all kinds of energetic healing, disconnecting energetic cords. It just keep and doors just keep opening because I opened the first one and I walked through and then I got exposed to all this other stuff and I picked and choose what resonated with me.
So NLP was the gateway for
Yes.
you through personal development. People have strong opinions about NLP. Some people love it, and other people think that it can be used as a tool of control.
It can be.
And I just throw that out there so that people who are listening are not like, Amy, you need to know. So
No, and I
okay.
agree with you. And I choose to use it for the good, to help myself and to help my clients because they need to understand. And it's mostly I really only talk about the way you talk to yourself.
Yeah, no, and I think that sounds to me like a great way to use it. All right, so you go down the personal development path. You learn these tools. This is actually a more recent part of your journey. All right, so this next one, into every conversation I have, I always write a couple questions that I'm like, I don't know if this is a good question. I ask them anyway because that's what I do. I'm going to ask you to think about something that like never happened, right? That's why I think it might not be a good question. 7 years ago, you made the choice to get sober, and a year after that, you leaned into support through 12-step programs. Right around the same time you're starting the personal development journey. What do you think your life might have been like if you hadn't cho had had instead you hadn't made that choice? You just chose to keep living the way you were living 7 years ago.
I think I'd be dead because I was so depressed and angry. I don't think I'd be here anymore, honestly. I think I would have let go.
That is a scary thing to think about.
And I don't have to because I'm here and I'm happy and I'm at peace. So.
That's a beautiful reflection, and your smile is so charming. All right. So, in a second, we're going to do the final questions. I want to give you a chance to tell people about the work you do today, which ties into your story of change, and how they can connect and follow you online.
So I help people with emotional trauma. And it's work, you know, and it's not easy. And I love it because the transformation on the other side is phenomenal. Because I was so unhappy, miserable, depressed, angry 7.5 years ago, 8 years ago when I started this. And I'm on the other side now. And I want people to know that what's on the other side is actually joy. Do I have everything? No. Do I still strive and to grow? Yes. But the place where I'm at right now, I can tell you for the first time in my life, I'm at peace and I have a calmness over me that I've never had my whole entire life.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. So you have a special offer for the audience. So first of all, you have a podcast which
I
is called The
do.
Phoenix Mind and can be found on all the streaming platforms. You have a program that you're offering for free, which is also called The Phoenix Mind, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes, the show description, and the email newsletter that I send out weekly that everybody should belong to, because then you get the links in your email box. So if people want to connect with you, that's where they can find all of that information. I want to thank you for sharing your podcast, your story, and that generous offer with the audience. Lisa, are you ready for my final three random questions?
I am.
All right, me too. All right, very good. If you find yourself alone with free time, what is one of the first things that you might think of to fill that time for yourself?
So I'll reflect back on what came up in the week that triggered me. And I'm
Okay.
like, okay, where did that come from? And what is that attached to that I can let it go? Sorry, that I could let it go wherever it's attached to, so I can let it go. I want to, and I'll do some journaling on it. And I'm like, until I figure out where it came from, what memory it's attached to. And because that's what gives me more peace, letting go of more stuff.
Okay, so when you find yourself with some free time, you look at your thoughts and journaling and making those connections. I love that. That's a very good answer. That's very intentional and thought-provoking. I appreciate it. Okay, if you were to question number two, if you were to take a dream vacation, money and time are no object, would you choose as a destination something that is a beachy location, a mountainy location, or an urban city location that has things like entertainment, museums, history, culture? What does fun travel look like to you?
I'd like to go city hopping in Europe
Oh, very nice.
for a whole summer.
An entire summer. That would be a beautiful vacation. I love it. I love it. And chasing the warm weather because you're a warm weather creature these days. All right. Third and final question. What is your feeling, Lisa, about junk drawers? If I came into your house and went through your kitchen and the rooms in your house, would I find drawers that were filled with junk? Or are you a person who just keeps things so organized and clean that you don't have junk drawers?
I have organized junk drawers.
What is an organized junk drawer look like?
So I have a plastic container. It's got two small drawers and then two bigger drawers.
Okay.
And so in the bottom drawers, all kinds of wires for anything that I might ever need for electronics. But
All right.
I don't want to throw out just in case, it's
Yep.
just in case drawer. And then there's a drawer for like miscellaneous stuff, like when you buy something and you have to put it together.
Yes, sure.
There's always leftover stuff.
Yes, they give you, yeah.
There's a drawer for that just in case I need, like, it falls apart. I need to go find something and fix it. So that's my just in case drawer. And then there's like bow. There's a drawer for like decorations, like bows and ribbons and stuff, and scotch tape to wrap presents.
Very good. I get it. I totally understand. Thank you for giving me a peek into your junk drawer philosophy. I totally appreciate it. That's it. Lisa Manzo, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was awesome.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.